What I want to do is just take a little bit of time to show you some slides about Kenya and the brethren who are currently there, and talk a little bit about what we're currently doing in Kenya. And this is it. This is the start. Okay. I'm going to start in Psalm chapter 37. This is one of the verses that when I bring it up in a sermon or any message, I emphasize that as God's people, this is a promise that we should take advantage of. Now, in English, the term take advantage of is used in a negative way, but it can be in a positive way as well, to take advantage of something that is proper or good. And there are many promises, as Mr. Williams was pointing out, if God makes a promise or He says it will be done, it will be done. And this is a verse that from a young man that I have prayed before God, where it says in verse 4, Psalm 37 verse 4, delight yourself also in the Lord, or in the Eternal, and He shall give you the desires of your heart. So it says that God will give you the desires of your heart. So a couple things. God is faithful. God cannot lie. If God says He'll do this, He'll do it. Now, this is a promise from God. Now, we have our part in it as well. Now, I would suggest that if you have goals or hopes in life that you want God to be a part of, if it's something that you desire in your life, then you pray to God. And first of all, ask Him to help you to delight in Him. And that means to put Him first in your life. That you are seeking God first. His will is most important to you. So if you do your part, then it's appropriate to tell God the desire of your heart. He knows. But He knows our hearts. But nowhere does it say you don't need to pray because God can read your heart. We know that. We have to pray. We're told to pray daily. That's our communication with God. Now, as Vivian's father, if I had access to provide her with any vehicle in the world, and she came to me and said, I really would like this car. Would you help me get it? Well, I would do that for her. I'd like to think I would. And God has the ability to grant us the desires of our heart. Now, of course, they need to be in line to His laws and His ways. And it's very clear that we have to do our part as far as delighting in God. And I'm sure that Mr. Lamar remembers this scripture because I used him as an example the last time, because he delights in ice cream. And if he delights in ice cream, he gets ice cream. When his wife allows it. Otherwise, he'd eat it all the time. He delights in it. So he seeks it. He wants it. He pursues it. So the point that I'm making is there have been specific times in my life where I've prayed this and God has blessed me with the desire of my heart. Before I went to Ambassador College, for those of you who remember the old days in Worldwide Church of God, when we had three college campuses, two in America and one in England, and we had the Ambassador Foundation where they sent students around the world to serve at projects. And you remember the church's newspaper at the time was called Worldwide News. So I sat down, actually I kneeled down at my bed with the Worldwide News, and I prayed to God to bless me to go on a project. And I had a specific project. I wanted to go to Sri Lanka. And I prayed about it. I told him it was a desire in my heart to do this. Now, I hardly been out of Kentucky when I was praying that. I'd been to Indiana and Tennessee, and that's about it. I lived in the same bedroom for 20 years. But I wanted to do this. I prayed about it. Went to college. Got in the program. They don't, just because you go to the program for going overseas didn't mean you got to go. You had to be selected still based upon grades and effort and different things. And so once I was in the program, I decided I would prefer to go to Thailand instead of Sri Lanka. That's where I really wanted to go. But I was announced to go to Sri Lanka. And as soon as that was said, I remembered specifically praying about it. Now that's happened several times in my life, and hopefully you can recognize specific times in your life that God has answered your prayers. There's another time. In 2005, at that time, of course, it was United News. It wasn't Worldwide News. Now it's One Accord or In Accord. I always get those two mixed up. But at the time, it was United News. And in United News, it said that they were looking for ministers to travel internationally and to serve internationally. And I got down on my knees with the paper and told God, it's my desire. I would love to serve internationally if it were good for God and His people. If it was to His glory for me to do that. And it was just a short time after that that Mr. Franks pulled me aside and asked me if I'd be willing to start serving in Kenya. So that's another time specifically I prayed to serve in Kenya. And it's another time when, as soon as he said that, it hit me. That's what I prayed for and asked for. And God has granted me, in that situation, the desire of my heart. I can tell you other times specifically where I know that it was an answer to prayer. My beautiful wife, I prayed specifically. That's a desire of my heart. God knew that before I prayed it. But there are other times as well that I can tell you about this. So hopefully you're using this scripture, this promise of God, and it's not like magic. I think we understand that. But every one of us should be delighting ourselves in God, and then we should pray and ask God to bless us with the desire of our heart. If it were magic, I'd have a Corvette. I've prayed for that too when I was younger. Still don't have one, but maybe someday. So there were a couple of slides before this that we've lost, but that's okay. Here, I just want to go through a little bit about Kenya itself. It's about the same size as the state of Texas. It has a population of about 40 million people. One-tenth of the entire population lives in Nairobi. So Nairobi has just under or over 4 million people. I've read different numbers, but one-tenth of the people live in Nairobi. Nairobi at one time was considered the most dangerous city in the world. It's not at this time. There are about 10 cities in Central America that have now considered the most dangerous cities in the world. And by the way, Baltimore is still on the list of the top 50 most dangerous cities in the world. But has a population of close to 40 million. Very small middle class. Pretty much you're either rich or you're poor. They do have a middle class, but it's very small and it's getting squeezed. So people are coming out on one side or the other because of inflation and other aspects of it. They're either poor or they're rich. There's not a whole lot of in between. And actually, we see that same, I don't know if I could call it phenomena or what you would call it, but the same effect is happening in America, just not to the same degree or at the same pace. After coffee, Kenya's biggest income generator is tourism. And I believe Ms. Bulger has been to Kenya. The Lamars have been to Kenya. Anybody else? Vivian has been to Kenya. Mrs. Waddle has been to Kenya. But tourism is huge. And they've done a very good job of maintaining their safari parks or their animal parks. Some countries in Africa, if you go to see animals, you'll see monkeys and a few other things, but you won't see a whole lot. Well, in Kenya, of course, they have they've done a good job of preserving it. And the reason for that is in many places, people eat whatever moves. It doesn't matter. If it moves, they eat it. So Kenya's done a good job of making sure that the animals are protected. And then it's an opportunity, if you ever get the chance, to go to a safari park and see the animals. It was a British colony from 1895 till 1963. You see this in many ways. If you travel through Kenya, if you went there, you would have noticed that they export the majority of their coffee, and the good coffee is exported, but they also export tea, but they keep good tea as well. They're tea drinkers instead of coffee drinkers. And, of course, they drive on the wrong side of the road and other influences from the British as well. They're a member of the East African community. I'll talk more about that here in just a moment. And before marriage, Kenyans still pay a dowry. So I just threw that in there as a cultural thing because any of you who have traveled internationally, I know several of you have, there are differences in culture. And one of the things that I have, with God's help, striven to do is to strive to help them to become godly, not to become American. So there are cultural differences, and if they don't go against God's laws or against God's ways, then that's okay. It's not wrong necessarily for them to do it. We were on one trip, and one man did offer me 10 cows for Brianna. And at the time, I thought that was a good offer. And then I read, that's where they start. They start at 10 cows. I guess he's waiting for me to negotiate with him. One of the elders that's in United, when his daughter was married, the family came to negotiate the dowry, and he told them he didn't want anything. And they thought it was a negotiating ploy. And they decided they weren't going to offer anything until he said what he wanted. And he said, "You do not have to give me anything." But it's so much a part of their culture, then they became offended. So they offered him a lot. He was able to put in indoor plumbing up until that point. I'd stay with him there, and they had outhouses out behind. But it was enough that he got new furniture, got indoor plumbing, got a propane stove, and so it worked out for him well to say he didn't want anything. Just informationally here, so you don't think I'm on a vacation. This is work, and there's a lot of travel involved just to get there. Of course, from D.C. to London is about 8 hours or so, give or take, depending on the winds. I stay in London for about 4 hours. I almost always have the same flights. And then there is another flight that will allow you to stay in London for 2 hours or less. Every time I've taken that, my bags don't make it to Kenya the same day I do. So now I wait on this little bit longer layover, 4 hours. And then it's 9 hours from London to Nairobi. And this slide, the first time I showed this, it showed up, but since then, the nation, or the continent, I should say, of Africa is bleeding out or something. But you can see where Kenya is as far as the country, or the shape of the country on the eastern side. And I mentioned that they're part of the eastern community, and it's a block of nations that they have a trading partnership. And like the European Union, you don't need your passport or visas, I should say, to travel between these countries. If you're a citizen of Kenya, you can travel to the eastern communities, the East African community countries, without visas. So you can go to Uganda, Tanzania, Rwanda, but I think this slide is this of East Africa itself. Technically, I pastor what they call East Africa, but currently we only have churches in Kenya. So currently I'm not traveling to Tanzania or Uganda. Rwanda is French-speaking, so Mr. Meeker travels there. But this will show you some of what's considered actually East Africa. This is more of the East African community, the trade community. Burundi is a part of that as well. I put this in here. It's a very busy slide, I know that, for two reasons. Number one, don't let this slide fool you. It looks like they have roads all through Kenya. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. There's never a guarantee. If it rains hard, the road's gone. Or there could be other reasons why it's not there. But also, it shows down in the southwest part of the country where the congregations are. Right in this area, you can see it's very close to Tanzania, or Tanzania, as they say, and also very close to Lake Victoria. But this town is called Migori. And most maps of Kenya will not show that area. It's a very small city or village in that sense. And so there is one congregation in Migori and one congregation in Ochuna, which takes about an hour and a half to drive there and walk a little bit to get to where the congregation is. Kenya is an equatorial country, so that white line that you see there, that runs all the way through Kenya. Thank you, Rod. Of course it doesn't. But the equator runs all the way through. I've never have tested this. I don't know if any of you have that were there. They say that the water in the toilet bowl runs one way on one side of the equator and one way on the other side. So I've known that forever. I should try it sometime. But being equatorial, for the most part, they have two seasons, dry and wet. Temperature stays the same most of the time. They do have some fluctuation. Probably told you before that in the what they call winter time, it's really just the cooler, dry time in my mind. But it'll get down to about 70 degrees during the day, and they literally wear winter coats because it's winter time, and they're cold, so they put these big coats on. During the summertime, it'll be in the 80s. In some of the lower lying areas, when you come down from the altitude, it'll be in the 90s and humid. But it's either dry or wet. This is a man named Japheth. I'm not going to try to pronounce his last name for you. But he, some time ago, left a United Church of God and started meeting with a few other brethren. And he had contacted me at that time asking if they could be a part of Kagwa. One of the challenges that we have in East Africa, sometimes I say Africa like I travel all over the country or the continent, but in East Africa, they believe that being a pastor is a job. So we decide, when you went to college, you decide what you're going to study and what you're going to do as a job or profession. Well, they can decide to be an electrician, a plumber, a policeman, or a pastor. And once they decide that they are a pastor, they have a place where they bring people and invite people. It's very common that they put a big speaker on the outside of their meeting hall. So in other words, this would be blasted to everyone around loudly so that it would invite them to come in and see what's going on. So they're very bombastic and large and loud. And then what they want to do is to get a Western church associated with them, to give them money and to build them a hall and to build them wells in the village and things of that nature. So when he called me, I took a long time, over about a year, in working with them and trying to discern where their hearts were. And of course, God knows that. But for a year, they kept the Sabbath. The group that started with him, they're still together. It's been almost 2 years now. They sent me reports every week saying this many people were here, this is what we did for the sermon, and those kind of things. And so when I was there in February, I spent a lot of time with them, with Japheth specifically, on his property. He's built a little place for them to meet. As of yet, what we've done as a church is we provided them with some plastic to put over the trees that they've used to build their place where they meet, and some plastic chairs so that they can sit while they're having services in these chairs. But everything else they've done themselves. So this is he and his wife. And then this is the hall where they meet, so to speak. I don't know what else to call it, but it's the place where they meet. We've had services outdoors, so it's nice to have something over your head so that if it's raining, you can still get together and have services. So that's the group in Magori. It's about 40 people that meet each Sabbath while we're there. This is another man who did the same thing. He was separate. He left United. There's a group that were meeting with him at his home. He built a place on his property. His name is Charles. And he's someone that I know. I baptized him in 07. And I've asked God to bless his children. I think 3 out of the 5 I've laid hands on and asked God to bless. But he did the same thing, and I did the same thing with him, as where it was just taking some time finding out where are you going with this? And so he also sends a report to let me know how many people have met with them and what was spoken on. I send them my Sabbath notes or Bible study and sermon notes, and that's what they use primarily, as well as if you've been on Life, Hope, and Truth with the articles. Some of them, as pastors, we can print off into a trifold internationally. It's for us to take over there because they do not have, if you look at this, let me see if I can get this to go backwards. There is no electricity on this property. There's no running water on this property. So they can't hook up to the internet and things of that nature. So we're trying to make sure that they're preaching the truth, and they can't read the articles off the internet, so we can print them off, have it in a trifold as it is, and then give it to them. And that's what they've been using to teach the brethren. This is Charles and his wife and one of their children. This is on their property. And I mentioned that there's not a lot of middle class. I'll show you his hut. This is where he lives. And where he lives, this would be considered a middle class hut because it has a very nice thatched roof. That thatching is hard to buy now in the rural areas because the price has gone way up. So they have a lot more metal roofs. And I've been into a hut when a rain comes and a metal roof, you just stop talking. It is so loud, there's no use to communicate, so you just wait till the rain goes by. So the thatch is very nice, and then also he has a floor. So most of the huts are just round mud huts with mud floors, and there's no glass for windows or anything. He has two rooms in there, a living room and a bedroom. And his family, it's him and his wife and five kids, that's where they all live. And then that's just the back of it. You'll see the hut to the left there. That's their kitchen. And they build a fire on the ground, put rocks around it, and that way they can put whatever cooking utensils, a pot or pan or something, on top of that in order to cook. So they have a separate place for cooking, which is also a sign that they're more middle class in that area. And there's the place that he built for the brethren to gather. He didn't ask me ahead of time, but I would have suggested to use white like at the other place instead of the black sheeting because it's hot and you're sitting in there and it gets very hot. But it works very well as far as having services. So when they asked me, because they have and they will again, I'm sure, to help them build a building on their property, personally, this works. I tell them, what are you talking about? You don't need a building. This works for services. They can get together, they can stay dry, and we'll see how it goes forward. But this is where they meet, and you can see the brethren here. We were together there on a Sunday for a Bible study, and that's the group that was there. I should put this slide in so that just to show how we do services there. The official language in Kenya is English and Kiswahili. And but in the rural areas, everyone wants their mother tongue to be the official language. So a lot of people don't learn English. They can speak Kiswahili, but if they can speak their mother tongue, that's what they want to speak. So we do have to have translations. So he's translating the Bible study for me. And every time I'm there, every time an elder comes through, there's always blessing of little children. So we do it here, as our tradition is, we have one Sabbath a year, second Sabbath after the Feast of Tabernacles, that we have the blessing of little children. But if we did that there, then we would have 40 or 50 kids to bless, which is why a long time ago the decision was made, instead of doing it at the feast as it was in the local areas, because there was a time when there were so many children in the church, they said, all right, you go back to your local area, do it the second Sabbath after the feast, but we have blessing of little children. And you'll see his list. I can't remember exactly how many we asked for God's blessing for on that day, but there were a lot. And I have them write down their names so that I can read their names specifically and have them come up with the children. I find it very confusing because the mothers will come up, and sometimes a brother or someone will help, but for some reason the fathers don't like to come up. So I actually will tell them, we can't do this till the father comes up. And so reluctantly the man will get up and come up. They don't even sit together. So if this were a church service in Kenya, the ladies would be on one side and the men would be on the other. And I have actually asked them before to get up and sit with your family so I can tell whose kids are whose, who's married to who. And also I tell them that the men should be helping with the children as well. That goes against their culture. But that's a godly thing. Men should be involved with their families. But to them, the men can be with the men, the women and the children. The women can take care of the kids. And that's one of those things. It's not American for men to be involved with their children. That's godly for men to be involved with their children. just another slide of asking the blessing. I thought I should point out that that's just light shining through. That's not bird droppings. That's what I thought it might be the first time I saw it. After services, we have a meal. And one of the things that they emphasize, I've looked this up in the past, and I can't remember. I didn't think of it before services. But there is a verse that talks about that if you show hospitality, that God will bless you. It's in the Old Testament, and it talks about if you show hospitality to a stranger, that God will grant you His blessings. So if you are in someone's home in rural Kenya, you better expect to eat. And they don't care if they just made it with standing water off the ground or if it's going to make you sick. If you're in their home, you better eat, because if you don't, you're taking their blessing. That's the way they see it. And so they're very hospitable in that sense. And they used to just make this big meal for me. And sometimes they'd even talk about how much of a drought there was. And here we have this great big meal in the house and only a few people eating it. And I was very uncomfortable. So I made the rule, if you're going to feed me, you got to feed everybody at church. I'm not going to sit here and eat and there's people outside waiting to talk to me or something of that nature. So we have a meal for everyone who comes to services. And also they found out that if they fry it, I would eat it. And that's not just because I'm from Kentucky, but it kills a lot of germs. So a lot of times on the trips, I eat a lot of fried chicken and a lot of fried potatoes, because they know now if they boil it in oil, I'll eat it. But if they cook it with water, sometimes I do. I don't know why. But sometimes I do. And sometimes my stomach is already upset and I'm thinking, I am just not going to eat this. So I'll peel a banana or something like that. But they're very kind, very hospitable, and they love to get together and eat. That is part of their culture of eating together. It's something that they consider to be a great blessing. Just a picture of the outdoor kitchen. They were cooking for our large group, so they used the indoor kitchen as well as the outdoor kitchen to prepare the meal after the Bible study that day. And that's the group that's in Ochuna currently. So we have 40-something people. There's six baptized members in Migori, and there's about 30 people now and six baptized members in Ochuna. So it's still small, but there's no doubt that God is doing a work there. I thought I would just throw this in so you can get a little taste of life in Africa. I tried to count the total number of people that were on this truck, and I couldn't tell you for sure how many are on there. But on this last trip, because I drive so much to get around and visit with various groups and things, there are other groups that we're working with that are not officially a part of Church of God or Worldwide Association. Sooner or later, I'm going to add a little bit of time to my trip to where I can take pictures of things that I see being transported. So if any of you have traveled through a third world country, you know what I'm talking about. Whether it's on a motorcycle, I couldn't find this picture, but I have a picture of two guys that have chickens tied all over them on a motorcycle. I was going to show that one to you. And I've got a picture of about 100 chickens tied on a car. The hood, the roof, and the trunk, they're all tied on there, and they're taking these chickens to market. You see people with a couch on a bicycle, big bags of all kinds of stuff. So I've started a list, and I've decided the list doesn't do it justice. I started a list of things people have on a motorcycle, a bicycle, and on their head. And because it's amazing the things they transport on their head. But when I can take pictures of these, I'll show you a list. But here you see this one. This next picture, I didn't take it. Someone sent it to me, but I have to show you. Looks like that goat's just along for a ride, but I think it's going along for slaughter somewhere. So this guy just tied the legs around his neck and around his waist, and he's taking his goat either home or to market. I don't know where he's taking her. Maybe he always takes it with him when he goes. I don't know. These kind of things used to amaze me when I said, but I've been there enough now to understand they're just living life. They're doing what they have to do to live life and to go through their day-to-day activities and making things work. So that's we live life here and they live life there. I'll just go quickly through some pictures of animals. For those of you who have been there, you've seen at the safari parks the beautiful animals. And I've got hundreds of pictures. Now when I go, I don't even take pictures unless it's a big cat or something that's really interesting. And I've been there more to some parks. I always try to take one day off and go to a safari park. And after you've been in the rural area, it's nice to go to something that's more Western. So the hotel's nice, the food's nice. As a matter of fact, the first time I took my family is one of the hardest trips I've ever had through Kenya, as far as where we've stayed and the food. And we took a day to go to a safari park to have lunch. We just went there, saw a few animals, had lunch. But they had such a spread, a buffet, that we were actually giddy after what we had eaten for a couple of weeks. We were going back through the line and just we couldn't contain ourselves. We were giddy. That's the only way to describe it. But it is a wonderful thing to see God's creation. And I was going to mention that this last time, the driver, I asked him to stay where we were because a herd of elephants were coming through. And there was a mother with a baby that was very close, and I was trying to get pictures. And he kept saying, "Can we go, please? Can we go? Can I go now?" And he actually pulled up a little bit, and I had to say, "Stop." And because I've been much closer to rhinos and the various things than we were to those elephants. And then when we were done, he finally said, "That's the closest I've ever been to an elephant. Thank you." I couldn't understand why he was nervous about it. I know they could charge, but as long as you don't get between them and their babies, you're okay. One of the tourist things to do in Nairobi, did you do this, Debbie? You kiss a giraffe? Do you have a picture? Oh, I wanted to see it. But they actually give you little pellets to put in your mouth, and then the giraffes will come up. They're trained to do that, to take it right out of your mouth. It's not bad unless their tongue comes out. They get a few inches close to you, and then they just try to grab it with their tongue. That's yucky. One of the places where we drive past is Lake Nakuru, which is famous for the flamingos. There are times of the year when there's thousands and thousands and thousands of flamingos on the lake. There are so many flamingos, it looks pink. You can just see thousands of them. I'm not much of a bird watcher. If any of you are, then you should put Kenya as a location on your list of places to go. It's one of the best places in the world for bird watching. That's what I've been told. This was a time where these two rhinos were, they were just walking along and eating, and we were easily closer than 10 yards to them. And one time I was driving myself through a safari park, and there was a rhino that was in the bushes right by the road. And so I stopped and put down my window. Of course, I'm driving on this side, he's on that side, and he's right there. He raised his head up, and he's right there by the window. But then he got spooked, I guess, because he walked in back in the bushes about 5 feet and hid behind a little tree, which I thought was funny. But I guess he felt more comfortable. And this is, of course, what everybody wants to see are the big cats. So I do want to take just a moment to ask for your prayers for some specific things as far as the work that's being done in East Africa. You've heard me ask for this before. There is a principle that I will share with you that I was taught at one time by another minister, that he said that if he has a situation or an issue that he needs help with, or he's going to ask someone to pray about, he'll pick 7 people that he believes that they are converted and close to God, and he'll ask them to pray 7 days about a situation. And so I have my group of advisors, so to speak, that before I go, I send it to various people and ask that they pray about this the next 7 days or the whole trip, but specifically the next 7 days. Spiritual discernment is always on that list. We imagine if you saw a pastor 2 times a year, once or twice a year, and that's it. There are certain dynamics that God has put in place in the church. He makes it clear. We even read from Ephesians 4 where it says that He gives the church. It's a gift from God. He puts people in these roles. And when you don't have that, there's something that's missing based upon the dynamics that God has put in place. So as far as spiritually, there's always the battle of who is God working with? Who has God's Spirit? I think I mentioned that earlier, or in a moment here. Who has God's Spirit? Who is God's Spirit working with? So that we focus our time on those people. There are always people who are trying to associate themselves with Westerners. And they're trying to get, that's their whole purpose. So there has to be that discernment. And working with some of the groups that are contacting us right now, I talked to a guy yesterday on the phone, and I just told him flat out, I don't believe you are sincerely interested in the truth. I try not to do that too often. I'm happy I've never said that to any of you. But sooner or later, it becomes evident. And if I'm wrong, I certainly pray that God will show me that I'm wrong. That's where I'm requesting your prayers as well, that God will bless me and the other men who work internationally with spiritual discernment so that when we go there, we can do God's will for God's people. There, I put that on there as well. That our focus and our time will be with those with whom God's Spirit is working. So I hope my grammar's correct in that, with whom. That is certainly something that I would appreciate your prayers concerning. Leadership on the ground. Currently there are no deacons or elders in Church of God or Worldwide Association. That's something that God needs to make clear. And as we go forward, I'd certainly appreciate your blessings. As far as leadership on the ground, I mean right there in Kenya, men and women who will set a good example of loving God's way of life and living it. Just like we struggle to come out of the world, they struggle to come out of the world. A lot of times for us, it's physical things. We talk about the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life. Over there, it's a lot of cultural things. So they still have witch doctors. They still live in a village. There is a village chief, and sometimes what the village chief tells them to do will go against God's laws or God's way of life, and they're expected to do it, or they're kicked out of the village. So their whole community, their family, everything that they're accustomed to, their life there, if they go against the village chief, they could be kicked out of the village. So their struggles of coming out of the world are very different than ours in that sense. Now, don't think it's easier in Kenya. One thing I tell people when they say, well, don't they have it easier because they don't have all these physical things? Well, Satan is clever enough to know how to tempt any of us wherever we are. And so they have their temptations. They have their trials. They have what they have to overcome or to come out of the world. So, but it's very, very difficult. There are certain challenges. How many of you believe that lightning is an animal? You understand it's electricity, and it's something that God has put into place. There's natural forces that will cause lightning. Well, they're taught in the rural areas that lightning is an animal. And if it strikes your home or strikes you, then you've upset that animal, and it's coming after you, and eventually it'll get you. But that's just part of their culture, even in the church, that we have to tell them, no, it's not an animal. I can tell you stories about that later if you want to know. Also, I gave a sermon or a Bible study in almost every congregation there when I was traveling there in the past. And I asked them, if you're going through a trial, what's one of the first things that might come to your mind? And so for us, it might be, why me? Or this is hard? Or obviously Rod Williams deserves this trial, not me. Something like that might go through our minds. But I asked them, and they said, someone has cursed me. That's the first thing that comes to their mind. If they go through something difficult, they believe they're cursed by somebody. So there's a lot of superstitions and cultural things that go against God's way of life. That some people, I know that there's voodoo and various things that come into America as well. But as a general rule, it's much more a part of their lives than it is ours. Godliness with contentment. We know that there is a scripture that tells us that. Specifically, 1 Timothy 6:6 says that godliness with contentment is great gain. Well, they've had enough Westerners come through. They've had enough churches come through, enough missionaries come through, that they do not think anything about it to ask you for your camera or to ask you for your luggage or for money. They just assume, especially if you're American, that you're rich. And you have a money tree. That's what I keep telling them. I do not have a money tree. I can't just give them money. And even in the church, they're convinced that if they spend the church's money, the church will give them more money. Some of them, not all of them. They just think it continually flows from the West because so many people have gone over there, and without trying to solve life issues or helping them to make better choices in life, they throw money at issues and problems. And so now they just believe that, well, you got money, give it to me. You can just go back to America and get some more. So godliness with contentment is something that all of us need to strive for, but certainly would appreciate your prayers for the brethren there. And then the best ways to serve the brethren, i.e. technology, etc. We're like I said, we're trying to figure out ways to have solar panels. It's possible we might buy a generator. I'm not sure of that yet. But as we go forward, I would certainly appreciate your prayers that God will bless us with direction as far as the best way to serve His people. That's what we want to do. We want to serve God's people how it pleases God.